We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College, presented by GiveUNC, Carolina's annual giving day. Make this March 30th a day like no other by supporting the causes at Carolina that inspire you most.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you, and our show all month long, presented by GiveUNC. Can join your fellow Tar Heels on March 30th. That is coming up 2 weeks. That's GiveUNC, the annual giving day for Carolina, March 30th. It is one day, hundreds of causes to support. And you may say, where can I learn more about this? GiveUNC.UNC.EDU. GiveUNC.UNC.EDU. And I have to imagine, Adam, that the fine folks at GiveUNC knew that they'd be getting a show like we have today when they are presenting the Carolina Insider in the month of March.
Au contraire, I don't think they could have ever imagined a show like today.
We're looking back to Carolina and the Greensboro Coliseum in the ACC tournament. Tar Heels thought in total played well, obviously didn't get the end result ultimately that they wanted, but did some good things on the way to a semifinal appearance and played more games than anybody else in the event. So take that, ACC. Of course, Carolina, and Adam and I have already been grinding hard on this in the pre-show meeting. Fourth time that the Tar Heels have been an 8 seed. Mm-hmm. They were so in 1990. They went to the Sweet 16. They were in 2000. Not a 9 in 2000. I'm an 8.
Nope, never an 8.
Went all the way to the Final Four. And they were an 8 in 2013. They did win a game, then fell in the second round. But that one doesn't count. That one doesn't count. So we'll talk about the Tar Heel matchup with Wisconsin. We're not going to go real deep into the Wisconsin matchup. We'll save that for Friday. And we will have a show this Friday. I know some folks were disconsolate that we didn't have a show this past Friday. I wanted to have one, but Adam said he was already working too hard and couldn't do it. And Adam has a list a mile long. We've gotten some very angry tweets directed towards Brian Kersey that we'll forward to him. And, oh, by the way, Bobby Crimmins is on the show, former Georgia Tech head coach. We should have known the Jackets were going to have Mojo and Greensboro Adam when we knew Bobby Crimmins was going to be a guest. Talked to the former Georgia Tech and College of Charleston head coach, former player at South Carolina. So we have that coming up too. What a bonanza, Adam.
That's an incredible show. Were you watching the ACC championship game when they played Josh Pastner's voicemail message?
Yes, I was. And I felt as though the message itself, like the message he was sending, was a very positive, good message. I kind of rolled my eyes at the fact that it's his outgoing voicemail, though.
Well, I think if I'm a random ESPN person who's just calling him, okay, that's a quirky message and also, of course, valid. But if I'm like Josh Pastner's wife, yeah, I'm like, bro, just push one to leave a message. I just want to leave a message.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, you would have to. Although nobody really leaves voicemails anymore. I get angry when we've talked about this before. Yeah. I mean, my outgoing voicemail is the computer voice.
Yeah, me too.
It didn't used to be, but you're the one who got me on that track.
Yeah.
You did it, and I was like, gosh, that's pretty good. That's better.
Yeah. I feel like that dissuades people from leaving a message.
Because they're like, is this actually Jones's number?
Right.
I'm unclear.
And if he doesn't care enough to put a voicemail message on here, is he ever going to listen to the voicemail that I'm leaving him? Which, of course, the answer is no.
Yeah.
I'm basic by my voice not being the outgoing message, I'm telling you I'm not going to listen to your message.
I don't even want voicemail anymore.
No.
I do want a phone, but I don't want voicemail.
I want to be able to see that you called.
Right. I'll call you back.
And I will call you back in all likelihood. But I'm probably not going to listen to your message unless, of course, you're my wife, in which case I will listen to it, not immediately, because if it was immediately, I'd answer the phone.
Right, sure.
But at some point, I'll listen and act on it appropriately and immediately.
Yeah. So all of that upcoming, we're brought to you in part by our friends at LS Tractor. Look, this is the confluence of a couple of things, Adam. It is a busy yard work time of year, but also we've got March Madness. So don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action. Circle it. Friday night, 7 o'clock, don't be raking your yard. You can get some help from LS Tractor. Normal yard maintenance, larger projects, LS Tractor has the machine for you. LSTractorUSA.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you?
We're getting into that time where almost any yard project can be put off because of the pollen. Yeah, okay. Like this weekend, my wife was like, we probably need to power wash. I was like, why don't we just wait till that pollen's gone?
Yeah.
You know, in June.
Yeah. That pollen's a real bugaboo this time of year.
Yeah. Thinking about washing the car. But that pollen's just going to get on it here pretty soon.
Yeah. No sense in doing anything rash.
No. Just wait for the pollen to dissipate, and then you can get on with your normal lives.
The Tar Heels got on with it in Greensboro, Adam. They looked, what a unbelievable rout of Notre Dame. Then they led by 50 late in the game. Then I thought a really quality win against a Virginia Tech team that I thought played hard and well in that particular game. And then Carolina fell into a trap that we have seen the Tar Heels get caught in a couple of times this year, and that is just digging a hole that's too deep. Got out of it, in one sense, against Florida State because they were able to get the lead in the second half, but then the last 4 minutes or so just couldn't get any quality shots, and Florida State got the stops and hit a big three and made enough free throws to eventually get the win. But, Adam, I think in total, a positive experience for the Tar Heels in Greensboro. Again, obviously they didn't get the ultimate desire, which was to win the tournament, but I thought played well and hopefully can take some of that quality play, learn from it, and play well in the next event as well.
And I think it was beneficial that the Tar Heels got to play against two opponents that were very fresh and very intense and really wanted to win that game. I would not put Notre Dame in that category, but that was good because Carolina showed kind of what it's capable of. If you had told me this year's team is going to have a bigger ACC tournament win than any other team in Tar Heel history, I'm not sure I would have believed that. And the second biggest ACC tournament win ever.
Yeah.
When we look back in the record books, we're like, boy, that 2021 Tar Heel team must have been an offensive juggernaut. Look at what they did to Notre Dame. Well, not the whole year. But I thought it was good to play against Virginia Tech, which very clearly was ready to prove they belonged, and people had given them some backhanded compliments about their seating, and they're good. Are they the third best team in the conference? I'm not sure about that, but they're good. They have good players. They have a good, very fiery coach.
Yeah, Mike Young.
They have an incredibly aggressive group of staff members on their bench.
Unclear their role other than to get hype.
Not sure what they do, but they wear black polo shirts, and that makes them look more intimidating. We learned that from Duke. So I thought that was a good game to play. And then Florida State is the same exact thing, except times about two. Except Leonard Hamilton, not fire at all. He's just over there just orchestrating things.
Smooth operator over there.
But very similar style of play, similar intensity, but better depth, better skill. And that was a very good second half, just a well-played second half until the final couple minutes, and Carolina just didn't compete at all in the first half. That was frustrating. And hopefully the lesson they take from that is you cannot play 18 really good minutes against one of the country's better teams and expect to win the game.
Adam, I thought, you know, Armando Bacot ended up being named first team all tournament, which I think he deserved. He played well, had double doubles in the Notre Dame and Virginia Tech games, played solidly against Florida State as well. I was a little surprised RJ Davis didn't get, I thought he might get second team all tournament. He had double figures in the first two games for Carolina and was really big in the Virginia Tech victory in particular, had 19. Garrison Brooks was clearly not 100%, didn't play in the first game, wasn't as effective as he normally is in the Virginia Tech or Florida State game. And, you know, I thought De'Ron Sharp played well. Walker Kessler was terrific against Notre Dame. He did not have the same success against Virginia Tech or Florida State, but Caleb Love had some really good moments. I mean, outside of just the team, I thought there were some individuals who had some nice moments in the event that, again, hopefully are ones that will help them get better.
Yeah, I thought so too. And we talked about this before the Florida State game, so this isn't just trying to rationalize Florida State. I think if Carolina beats Florida State and has to come back and play a fourth game on Saturday, I think you run the real risk of being out of gas this week, because that would have been yet another really intense game against a very fresh opponent that had a full day off to get ready, who desperately wanted to win the ACC tournament to do it for old Bobby because they knew he was going to be on the pod. I think it would be very, very tough to play four straight tough games in Greensboro and be ready to go on Friday. So I think other than winning the tournament, which we all know is the ultimate goal, I think Carolina got what it needed out of the ACC tournament, and then it was time to start thinking about the NCAA tournament because that's going to be difficult.
Adam, I think it's fair to say that Tar Heel fans were big mad about the officiating in the Florida State game. Let's go through some of our Twitter comments.
Okay.
BJ Davis. Can y'all get Brian Kersey back on so he can explain how atrociously bad his officials have been in this game? Thanks in advance. Justice. Enough yucking it up with Brian Kersey every year. ACC officiating is awful, and it's embarrassing in a game like that. How much clipping did he do from the command center tonight? Well, I can answer that, Justice. None, because he was in Greensboro. Josh. Get your boy Brian Kersey back on the pod because we have about 10 to 15. How can you justify that? So we need to discuss. Cameron, Brian Kersey is just lucky he was on the pod last Tuesday instead of this coming Tuesday. Jared, would love to know what Brian Kersey thought of the obviously missed calls from the game last night. Not blaming the refs, but it was pretty egregious. So, Adam. We also got Horace said, Brian Kersey, period. Quit bringing that blowhard on and giving him a platform. Let's see here. I'm sorry for VCU and St. Bonaventure for having Brian Kersey assign Burt Smith and Roger Ayers for the A-10 title game after this horrid performance on Friday night. And sent us a video of the missed calls. And Adam, I think that's it. So, look, the officials were, they weren't very good. I thought they were bad in that game. Big bad. Big. I'm big mad, and they were big bad. But, it, I mean, that's, Carolina had plenty of opportunities to win the game on its own. Having said that, I mean, I do think twice Florida State stepped out of bounds that wasn't called and scored baskets. And I thought the lack of a goaltend, I still don't know how you couldn't call goaltend on that one play where I think it was Armando Bacot was fouled shooting and the ball had hit the backboard and the rim was still on the rim and was slapped off the rim by a Florida State player. Those were pretty egregious missed calls that did take points off for Carolina, put points on for Florida State. All of that is true. Having said that, yeah, Carolina didn't shoot well at the free throw line, didn't execute offensively the last couple minutes. So I think both things can be true. I did not think the officials had a good night, and there were a couple of important calls that didn't go Carolina's way. And yet, I didn't leave that game thinking that the Tar Heels lost because of the officials. Again, some key plays hurt the Tar Heel chances to win the game.
I normally think officiating evens out, but I didn't think it did.
Yeah, I didn't in that game. No, I agree with that.
Although I'm sure Florida State's got two or three plays they say, oh, these were missed. As you said, the thing about the Carolina plays were they led directly to points. And I don't understand next year when Brian Kersey's on and everybody's in a better mood, perhaps we can ask him. I don't understand why we can spend 5 minutes reviewing an out-of-bounds play that is fairly obvious. But a play like the goaltend that directly leads to points, why can't you review that at any juncture of the game? That's actual points on the scoreboard. That should be reviewable any time, especially if you start getting the sense, as I think you got in the building, that Roger Ayers was pretty sure he had missed that one. And if he wasn't sure, Roy Williams made sure that he knew about it. And so I think when he starts getting that feeling, he's a good enough official to go, you know what, if everyone here is saying that, maybe we should take a look at it for just a second. And he would have seen, oh, that's 2 points. 2 points.
Yeah.
And Jones, if we had had out-of-bounds lasers.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
That idea got poo-pooed by Brian Kersey. Well, Mr. Kersey, perhaps you'd like to up your equity stake in out-of-bounds lasers are us, because I think that would have made a difference too. It was a foot fault. Why can they do it in tennis, but you can't do it in basketball?
Yeah, they do. They've got Cyclops there in tennis.
It doesn't have to be on all the time, but you would want it to be on for out-of-bounds plays. The thing lights up. We all know. Although, I got to say, we knew right in real time they had stepped out of bounds.
The Wyatt Wilkes one where he was double-teamed, stepped out of bounds, knocked Anthony Harris over, and then kind of just tipped the ball to himself up in the air while walking down the court. That one probably shouldn't have been missed, huh?
Well, I think, and everyone in our all in our mentions who wants to know what Brian Kersey thinks, I think the fact that you didn't see Roger Ayers and Bert Smith on Saturday night probably tells you what he thinks, because that's a game Roger Ayers would normally do. He is, I guess, sort of the dean of ACC officials. And he'd be doing the ACC championship game unless there were some missteps earlier in the tournament, sort of like the NCAA. If you don't officiate well, you don't advance. If you don't play well, you don't advance. Same thing in the ACC tournament. And I think, of course, Brian Kersey's not going to say, well, guys, I want to let everyone know these people did a bad job, and so I've demoted them. But I think if you read between the lines, you see what was thought. That video...
Yeah, the video is not a good look.
Was tough.
Not a good look. Before we take a brief look at the NCAA tournament, a reminder that we are brought to you in part by the Pinehurst Resort. Donald Ross's masterpiece number 2 and Gil Hance's stunning redesign of number 4 are both there, yes. But there's the cradle. There's the North and South Bar, of course, the Pinehurst Brewing Company as well. Never has there been more to discover at the cradle of American golf than right now. Pinehurst.com. Plan your visit. That is Pinehurst.com. Adam, 7 ACC teams get in. None seeded higher than a four. Your tournament champion, Georgia Tech, is a nine seed. Tar Heels check in as an eight. And Louisville, the first team out. I think it was pretty clear that the selection committee didn't feel as though the ACC had a particularly strong season.
We're going to try to chat with Bubba Cunningham on the video pod later this week. And as we know, he was in the room for these discussions. So it'll be interesting to see what he says. I was stunned Louisville was out. It never really crossed my mind that they would be out. Although we said watching them Wednesday night, it seemed like they weren't fully checked into that game. And we thought that might be a negative, but I really didn't think that would be a, oh, that's keeping them out of the tournament kind of effort. But I think it did. I think if they win that game, they're in. But they didn't, and they're out.
And, of course, there were, you know, Georgetown and Arizona or Oregon State getting bids when they normally would not have. But that stuff happens every year. There's going to be a couple like that. And, you know, now Louisville is in this weird situation of waiting to see. They could be a replacement team if one of the teams has to bow out before tonight, then Louisville could slide into that team's spot. So, and Adam, that also brings up, you know, part of the ACC tournament that we didn't talk about, and that's, you know, Virginia and Duke both having to stop playing in the tournament. And so, you know, I would be surprised if there is no disruption to the NCAA tournament. But also, as long as you have five players, you can play. So if you, one positive doesn't necessarily knock you out of the tournament. And so we'll see. But I mean, I have to think something's going to happen.
68 teams.
Right.
The odds are something's going to happen to one. And so, okay, so this brings up a point that I had been wondering about, but so I'm going to tell you what I thought, and then I'm going to tell you what people a lot smarter than me thought, which is opposite of what I thought and proves that what I thought was wrong.
Okay.
When I was thinking about this,
I thought it was pronounced Raymond.
Malik Monk. Let's chat about him. When I was thinking about this, I thought it seems, I don't want to say bad, but it just, not wrong, but weird, that we're going to send all these teams to Indianapolis for the men and San Antonio for the women and lock them up for a couple of days and not let them leave the hotel so that we can all watch the NCAA tournament. That, something about that just seems a little off to me. And I realize the regular season's been weird already, and this is probably the only way to have the NCAA tournament. But something's just not right about putting college students in this room, not letting them leave so that we can all enjoy it and also some of us make money off of it while they do what we tell them to do. So that's what I thought. But then I talked to some folks on the men's side. I talked to some folks on the women's side. And they said, you know what? I don't think the players really care. They just want to be able to play. And the opportunity to play outweighs all of that. So maybe that's right. But you're still missing out on, you're missing out on the 05 team celebrating Sean May's birthday. Or Luke May always going out to eat with his parents. You know how you always saw him in the lobby and his parents would be waiting for him. They'd go get something to eat because the Mays are awesome. You're not going to get to do that this year. If you know, RJ Davis's parents, if they elect to go to Indianapolis, are going to have to stay somewhere else and don't get near their son. That's a little weird. But according to the folks who know the players the best and the players, they just want to have the opportunity to play the games. And this is, I guess, really the only way to do it safely, I guess.
Yeah. We are in a much different place now than a year ago, or even, I feel like, 3 months ago. But we're not there yet. I think the ACC tournament showed that, and it's palatable to have a Georgia Tech win the ACC tournament, despite only playing two games. But I don't think you want to have, you know, Illinois win the championship and only play two instead of six games or something. And so I think they're going to do everything they can to get these games played. And, I mean, it's I didn't really realize, you know, how spread out it is as far as the games until I was thinking, who's playing before the Tar Heels on Friday in Mackey Arena on the campus of Purdue? And there's only one game, and it's 4 hours ahead of time, and it's Ohio State and Oral Roberts. So, that I mean, they have, with the different sites and the schedule, you know, they are trying to make it as, again, I'll use safe as possible to play, get these games in, and as likely as possible to get these games in, even if it's a little different than normal. For everyone's benefit, I guess.
Yeah. We're definitely all benefiting.
Right.
I'm not, I mean, I guess the players are benefiting by being safe, but it's not the NBA where they're getting paid millions of dollars. And so I don't feel bad about them going in a bubble. Like, if you don't like it, you don't have to get paid.
Right.
If just using a random person, if Garrison Brooks doesn't like it, what's he going to do?
Yeah, I guess he just wouldn't play. But I think they want to play, to your
point.
Right. Right. So it will be a unique event.
Yes. Well, and so that reminds me of another thing. So did you see the thing where the NCAA is trying to arrange it so that your second round game, if you win, is at a different place from your first round game?
Why would they do that?
So that neither side has an advantage in familiarity.
Oh, I guess because...
Because... You know,
for example,
Baylor's not at
Baylor and Hartford aren't playing in Mackey Arena.
Right. Okay, so that makes sense, I guess. But both Ohio State and Wisconsin are playing at Purdue, where they play all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of those where, in theory, sure, I don't think it really makes that much of a difference.
I mean,
it's not like Carolina's playing in the Smith Center.
Right. Well, and if somebody's going to say, well, I think we lost because Houston had shot at Lucas Oil Field before, like, you were probably going to lose anyway if that's
right.
Why you think you lost.
Right.
So if Carolina happens to beat Wisconsin, the game on Sunday, in theory, will not be at Mackey Arena, and it won't be wherever Baylor plays.
Let's see.
It'll be somewhere else.
Baylor plays in Lucas Oil.
So it will not be there.
Right. We'll talk more about Wisconsin and the matchup with them on Friday, but you're an 8-9. When you're in that seed, you're going to play somebody good, and obviously you're going to be matched up with a 1 seed. Yeah, I was hoping Carolina would have gotten to a 7 because I do think there is a difference between the 1s and the 2s, and that's not to suggest that, you know, Alabama and Houston and Ohio State and Iowa aren't good teams. Tar Heels saw Iowa earlier this year and know that they are a good team. But I think the body of work this year has shown that Gonzaga is certainly the best team, or has been to this point. You know, Baylor hadn't been playing as well since it came off a COVID break, so maybe whoever wins this Carolina-Wisconsin game has a chance to do something. So we'll see, but you got to beat Wisconsin first, and they're an older team, slower pace, good defense. So it'll be a challenge for sure. And again, we'll talk more in detail on Friday. But when you play yourself onto this seed line, that's why you try to be a 1 or a 2 seed throughout the year, so that you have a much more palatable opponent in game one.
3 or so weeks ago, we were worried about the Tar Heels making it.
Yeah, that's right.
And last year at this time, had there been a tournament, the Tar Heels were not going to make it. So,
talking about big mad. I saw a tweet that said, you know, it was like, here are the longest consecutive streaks of teams in the tournament. And Carolina was in there at 10. And you can imagine that there were some fans in there that didn't enjoy that. But hey, look at them. There wasn't a tournament last year.
Wasn't a tournament. Can't help it.
When there's no tournament to miss, you can't miss it.
But when there is a tournament and you miss it.
Yeah, you do indeed miss it.
You missed it.
Yeah. By the way, I think if the Tar Heel team that we've seen in the last couple of weeks, again, outside of that head scratcher against Marquette, I think if the Tar Heel team that we have seen in the last couple of weeks, they would be better than an 8 seed if that team had been there all year long. But, I mean, that's why they play the games, Adam.
Yeah.
I think Carolina's probably, I mean, what was their overall seed was, I think, 31. I mean, I think Carolina's probably around 20 to 25 in reality, but not, I mean, their resume, they are seated in the right area for what their whole body of work is this year.
I think today's Carolina is a top 20 team, just like I think Florida State's a top 10 team.
Right.
But whole season Carolina is in the low 30s probably, yeah, which is where they are.
Okay, Adam, anything else about ACC tournament, NCAA tournament, before we get to our Bobby Crimmins interview?
No.
Okay. This is a first, Adam. We had to change our means of talking to Bobby Crimmins mid-interview. Oh, well, really, pretty early in the interview, it became apparent that our connection wasn't good enough on the Zoom in which we were doing the interview, so we had to just go over to the old telephone after that.
Yeah, you failed us, technology.
Yeah, but we were ready.
Yep.
So there, you will recognize a difference at some point pretty early in the interview. So that's what happened. We're just laying it all on the table for you. And, I mean, we've already given you half an hour of awesomeness plus Bobby Crimmins coming up, but don't you worry. There's still more after that, too. We've got a lot to do. So stick with us here on the Carolina Insider.
We talk a lot about the history of the ACC, and really excited today to have not only somebody who helped make the ACC what it is, but someone who achieved the very rare feat of both playing and coaching against Carolina, and everybody at Carolina still seems to like him. So we want to find out how Bobby Crimmins was able to pull that off. Coach Crimmins, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Now, I think people, of course, know you as the head coach at Georgia Tech and the namesake of Bobby Crimmins Court, which they see on television every time the Jackets play. But they may not remember that you also played at South Carolina during a time when the Carolina-South Carolina rivalry was pretty hot. What were those times like?
Yeah, they were great times. You know, I did not know about, you know, I knew a little bit about Coach McGuire, but I did not know the whole history when I went to school there. And of course, freshmen had to play freshman ball. We were all ineligible for varsity. And by the time I was a sophomore, I've learned a lot about Coach McGuire, you know, having coach in North Carolina, hiring Dean Smith before he left. And whenever we played North Carolina, it was a tough game. It brought back a lot of fond memories for Coach McGuire, but also a bittersweet taste because when he left there. And then, of course, it was tough on his former assistant, Dean Smith, playing against his mentor, Coach McGuire. And they had great, great battles. And Dean Smith was incredibly loyal to Frank McGuire, but he also knew that, you know, he had to beat him once the ball went up in the air. And we had some intense, intense battles. But because Frank McGuire had coached in North Carolina and now was coaching at South Carolina, the rivalry just, it went to a really high level of intensity.
Coach, why was coaching something you wanted to get into? Was it a relationship you had with a coach? Was it just the game of basketball? Was it something you always wanted to do?
No, I just wanted to play. I played basketball since I was probably 7, 8, 9, 10, and I grew up right across the street from a schoolyard in New York City in the Bronx. My parents were Irish immigrants. And I gravitated to the schoolyard and fell in love with the game of basketball. And it wasn't until I was unsuccessful as a trying to play professionally. Actually, Bones McKinney, I was the last guy cut from the Carolina Cougars. Mm-hmm. And when my basketball playing opportunities started to diminish, that's all of a sudden when the coaching door opened up. And once the coaching door opened up, I liked it right away because of its affiliation with the game of basketball, obviously. And then I started to fall in love with it. And it became my new passion. Rather than playing, I wanted to coach.
What cultural adjustments did you have to make moving from the Bronx to Columbia, South Carolina?
Well, let me start by saying my mother bought me a new suit, and we didn't know about the weather in Columbia, and it was a wool suit. So the first adjustment was the heat. I arrived there in 1965 or 66, 65, and it was like, you know, 105, 110 degrees, and the heat was incredible. And Columbia, they loved the University of South Carolina in Columbia. And they loved Frank McGuire. They were so proud to have a national championship coaching in Columbia. So everything was good. Whoever Coach McGuire recruited, they fell in love with. We were building a new arena, the Carolina Coliseum, which at the time was going to be the most beautiful arena in the South. So there was a lot going on when I went to Columbia.
What were some of the elements of Coach McGuire's coaching style that appealed to you and that then you also tried to adapt as you began your coaching journey?
Well, Coach McGuire was like the godfather. He was so respected because of, again, his national championship at North Carolina. And what he did when he came to Columbia, it was like a blueprint of what he did in Chapel Hill, except all the New York kids going to Chapel Hill, they would go to Columbia, South Carolina. But we all looked up to him. We were scared of him. He dressed immaculately. He was always so first class, and he had a great Irish smile. He knew everybody in New York, and he was just, you know, We had great respect for him, but we were scared of him.
Can you hear me now? Good.
Coach, you started your head coaching journey at Appalachian State and then came to Georgia Tech in the very early 80s. For folks who only know Georgia Tech as what it is now, what was the Georgia Tech basketball of 1981 that you walked into? What was that like?
Oh, boy. Let me say this quickly. And that year before I came to Georgia Tech, I tried to get an interview at Duke and NC State. And that's when they hired Coach K and Jimmy V. And so I came in 1 year behind those two guys, and they called us the Young Guns. And obviously, we knew Dean Smith was the king of the hill. And there was a lot of animosity right off the bat. I could sense the intensity between, let's say, Lefty Dizelle, Terry Holland, and Dean Smith. Norm Sloan had left. I had heard about that. He had a big rival with Coach Smith, and I could feel right away that, I was walking into a bit of a jungle, and there were a lot of tigers and different animals around, and I had to really be careful. Valvano made things a lot easier. Valvano was the life of the party. He made everybody laugh. You could come into a meeting and be mad at that. Everybody could be mad at each other, and Jimmy would start talking, and everybody would be laughing. And right away, the mood would change, and everybody was in a festive mood. Coach K was quiet. He listened a lot. He was the smart one in the room. And, but, you know, it was, at first, you know, I was a little bit, in awe of being around, you know, Lefty and Terry. I had played against them as a player. So I wasn't where, I kind of knew them. Of course, I played against Coach Smith, played against Lefty. I played against Terry Holland, I believe. So I played against Norm Sloan, but Norm Sloan was gone when I came in as a coach at Georgia Tech. He left NC State to go to Florida, and that's when Jimmy V came in. So I was happy to be a coach in the league where I played. I had, as a player, I lost an ACC championship game in double overtime, And once I started coaching, I thought it'd really be cool if I could ever coach in the league where I played and get redemption for that ACC loss I had as a player and get redemption as a coach.
Coach, so, and this is kind of a basic question, but as a young coach, what was it like to have to go through that grind of the ACC in your conference play when you're going against a Virginia with Ralph Sampson and a North Carolina with Dean Smith on the sideline and Lefty Drizel at Maryland? When you're trying to establish your program, what were the difficulties there of trying to navigate through those waters?
Well, there's a saying, like, you know, sometimes it's better, it's best for what you don't know. And I was never known to be, you know, any kind of a, you know, brilliant person. And I really, you know, I just went into things without thinking about those type of things. You know, at first I heard, you know, people told me that I was committing a, they said, you know, you're gonna ruin your career. You'll never win a game there. You're gonna get killed. And I heard some of that, and truthfully, some of that bothered me. I said, I wonder what I'm getting into here, the way these people are talking. But I never really looked at it like that. I just looked at it as a great opportunity. I loved the ACC. It was ACC basketball, and I thought I could get players to play, you know, to want to play in the ACC. So, you know, I never thought about it, and I'm glad to this day. I'm glad I didn't think about it much, because had I thought about it a lot, I might not have been successful.
I think we always think about you as a coach of great point guards, and especially New York point guards. But the point guard who helped you take that first big step was not from New York. How in the world did you end up landing Mark Price?
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember I had a staff meeting, and I told my assistants, I said, you know, there's a lot of good point guards out there. I said, I know we're not going to get a Ralph Sampson. He's not going to come to Georgia Tech. But there's got to be a really good point guard that would love to have the opportunity to start as a freshman in the ACC. And my assistant at the time was George Felton. George is a scout for the San Antonio Spurs today. And George was at an AAU tournament in Jacksonville, and he called me. He said, I think I got a point guard that you're really going to like. And I asked him where he was, and I said, where are you? He said, I'm in Jacksonville. And I said, well, that's not too far from Atlanta, and I think we had a Georgia Tech club in Jacksonville. He said, no, I'm at the tournament here. The kid is from Enid, Oklahoma. And I said to George, you got to be kidding me. I said, you know, I've never been to Oklahoma in my life. I had no clue where, you know, Enid is. All I knew about Oklahoma was, you know, cowboy hats and boots. And I said, George, you got to be kidding me. And, you know, he said, no, I'm not kidding you. And so finally, he convinced me to go to Enid. And I couldn't believe it. I sent my other assistant first, Ben Joe, because I didn't believe, you know, the kid was that, you know, any good. And so Ben Joe came back and he said, Bobby, I think you better go see him. And so I went to see him play, and I couldn't believe how quick he was. He could shoot. And then all of a sudden we started to think, why isn't everybody else recruiting him? And actually, you know, he wanted to go to North Carolina. He wanted to play in the ACC at North Carolina. And fortunately for me, you guys had signed a guy from Oklahoma by the name of Steve Hale. Hmm. And so that knocked out the opportunity for Mark to go to Oklahoma. And I've never run into Steve Hale, but I want to thank him for going to North Carolina, because that was North Carolina was really up there with Mark. And actually, you know, all of a sudden near the latter part of his high school career, then people started to come. But we were there every game. I'm almost positive we saw him play every game. Homer Rice, your former athletic director, who is now the athletic director at Georgia Tech, he told me, he said, Bobby, you're going to break an unlimited budget here. But Homer Rice, I told him, I said, this kid could be special. And not only is he a really, really good player, but he's a great, great kid, great student. And so Homer Rice really liked that. So he gave me permission to go all out. And we decided to go all out. And then, you know, at the end, a lot of big schools came in. But Mark, he was upset that they were not there earlier. And he decided to come with us. We were nervous at first. We weren't sure he'd be the real deal. And then all of a sudden, we found out he was. And he definitely started our program.
So you win the 1985 ACC Tournament Championship with Mark Price. What did that do, that win, do for your program?
Oh, it put us on the map. No question, it put us on the map. You know, again, everybody said we couldn't beat North Carolina for the third time. But, you know, we didn't care about those things. And we just went out and played. And it was a, you know, we did have a little advantage of it being played in Atlanta in the Omni. And we had a tremendous crowd there rooting for us. And it turned out to be a great game. And we pulled it out right at the end. And it was just a magical moment for everybody. And, you know, it was really fantastic.
What do you think it was about you that connected with this school and this environment that pretty much had no basketball history at all and enabled them to buy into the point that as you said, they were willing to come be a great crowd and the Thriller Dome turned into one of the toughest places to play in the ACC? Why did that connection happen?
Well, they had a little tradition. They had some Coach Wack Hyder. Yeah, he had some great wins over Adolph Ruff at Kentucky. But I think, you know, in answering your question, you got to start with Homer Rice. You know, Dr. Rice was the athletic director in North Carolina, and he knew what it took. He knew what it took to be a winner in the ACC. And he gave us the green light. Now, he told us, he said, if you get a serious NCAA violation, you're on your own. I'm going to fire you, and, you know, I'm sorry. But he knew what it took. And he was a great leader. He was, you know, the perfect guy because of his experience at North Carolina. And he showed us the way. And he showed us the way in terms of facilities. He was a great leader. He taught us a lot about leadership. He helped me recruit Mark Price. You know, on Mark's visit, Dr. Rice spent at least an hour talking to him. So I think you've got to give Homer Rice tremendous credit to show us all the way to win in the ACC.
All right, Coach, I want to ask you about two specific games against Carolina. And the first one, I don't remember the year, but I remember Dennis Scott stealing that inbounds right at the end of the game and making a three right at the end. You upset Young Jones that night, who was a Young Tar Heel fan. Well, do you remember that play and that moment and what was going through your mind?
I do. I do remember that. Afterwards, you know, Coach Smith and I were always close friends because of Coach McGuire, and I never brought it up because I know he would kill me. but what I remember is this. I remember, if I'm correct, you guys fouled. You guys fouled because you were up three. And I remember Carl Brown going to the free throw line. You were up three, and he had two shots. And so the first shot was very important. I wanted to see what he did with the first shot. So he made the first shot, and that's when I called timeout. I didn't call timeout right away. And then I told Carl to miss the second shot, and I told everybody how to you go this way and another guy go that way and try and get the rebound. And, you know, we're only down 2 points. You could go right back up with it or you could kick it out. Well, Carl shot the free throw, and he hit the backboard, and it went in. So now we're down one, but the ball went in, and you guys took it out of bounds. And we pressed, and we got the steal. I couldn't believe it. Dennis Scott got a deflection, and he got the steal. And then he turned around, he shot a three. And the ball went in, and it was pandemonium after that. Now you guys still had a couple of seconds left, and you know, as long as time is on the clock, Dean Smith is not out of the game. And you threw a long pass, and we intercepted the pass. But that's what happened. That's what I remember.
Coach, the other game I wanted to ask you about was the 1993 ACC tournament final. Of course, the Tar Heels would go on to win the national championship later that year. James Forrest had a terrific game for you guys. What do you remember about that tournament run?
Well, the first thing I remember, I suspended James Forrest. He missed curfew, and I told him he was sitting the first 10 minutes or something like that at the tournament. But I do remember that game. That game was in Charlotte, if I remember correctly.
Yes, sir.
And it was a heck of a game. And we were very, very deliberate. And I had some really good players. You've got to have players. And James Forrest was on fire. I had Travis Best, Drew Barry. And those guys can play. They were smart. Drew and Travis were a great backcourt. James was an undersized, four-man, but he could jump out of the gym. And he was just, he was just on fire. That was a great win for us. We lost in the first round of the NCAA after that game, and that took a lot out of that great win. But I do remember that game in Charlotte. It was I remember how deliberately we played.
That first game that Jones asked you about was 1989. It was March 1st, 1989. Not that I still bear emotional scars or that the television that had an antenna on it in our playroom is still bent because I got so mad and Hulk, Incredible Hulk, like Bennett when Dennis Scott made that three-pointer. So that was really fun to relive that.
That was something. Dean Smith, we had a great relationship because Dean Smith was, obviously an incredible basketball coach. And, Coach K and Jimmy, if he was alive, he made us all better. It seemed like the older guys, Lefty Terry and at the time Norm Sloan, they had a different relationship. But when the younger guys came in, we had great respect for Dean Smith. And he made us better. We knew and we had to go through Chapel Hill. He made us better coaches because he was so well prepared. He made us better recruiters because you guys had so much talent. And it was fun. It was really fun. Because of Coach Aguirre, we always had a great relationship. When Coach Aguirre, late in his life, when he got sick, there was nobody more loyal to Frank Aguirre than Dean Smith. And I will always, always remember that loyalty.
Now, that brings up an interesting question because we had Coach Drizel on a couple years ago, and he told us that sometimes at the coaches' meetings, some of the coaches would throw bottle rockets or something at Coach Smith's door. Were you ever part of these shenanigans at the ACC coaches' meetings?
No, I missed that. The big shenanigan was Coach Smith just had this habit of always coming late. I couldn't believe it. And obviously he did it intentionally. And he wanted to upset some of the other coaches. So Valvano, one time, he came in and he says, okay, Dean Smith's not here. So he said, he looked at me, he said, Bobby, Mike, you two guys come with me. And he took us out to the lobby and he saw the bellhop there. And he said, look, here's $20. The three of us are going into the men's room. When Dean Smith comes in, I want you to tell us. So Mike and I followed Jimmy into the men's room. And we're just sitting there talking for about 20 minutes. And finally the bellhop comes in, and he said, Coach Smith just arrived. And Jimmy said, thank you. And then we went and walked into the meeting, the three of us. And Jimmy wanted to make sure that we were late this time and not Dean Smith. So that was a shenanigan that was put on by Jimmy. But I couldn't get over it how late Coach Smith would come to the meeting. And it really upset the other coaches, and I finally got it. I finally knew he knew exactly what he was doing, and right away there would be intensity in the room. But again, the guy who took all the intensity out of the room was Jimmy Valvano. He was he had everybody laughing within 15 minutes of the meeting.
Now, you mentioned you sort of found Mark Price when no one knew who he was. Everyone, it seemed like, knew who Kenny Anderson was. How did that recruitment take place, and how was Georgia Tech able to land Kenny Anderson?
Well, it comes back to Frank McGuire. Kenny Anderson's high school coach was Coach Jack Curran. He coached, of course, Kenny Smith, who played for you guys. And Coach Curran had played basketball and mostly baseball for Frank McGuire at St. John's. And also, Coach Curran went to a high school in the Bronx called All Hallows High School. And that's where I went to high school. So right away, Coach Curran and I became very, very good friends. And I used to speak at his camp every year up in Fordham University. And one time, Coach said to me, he said, "Bobby, see that little kid over there? He's going to start for me as a freshman." And I knew no freshman ever started for Coach Curran. And so I said, "Coach, I'd love to meet him." And it was Kenny Anderson. And from that moment on, I started recruiting Kenny. I recruited him for 4 years. But the bottom line was Coach Curran. You know, Coach Curran, my teammate Bobby Carver played at Malloy. Of course, Kevin Joyce, Brian Winters, they all went to South Carolina. And Coach Curran was very, very loyal to Frank McGuire. And I worked my butt off. And Coach Curran realized that. And with Kenny Anderson, it was between North Carolina, Syracuse, and Georgia Tech. And when Kenny went to tell him that he wanted to go to Georgia Tech, he said, "Fine." He did not, you know, he did not tell Kenny, you know, you shouldn't go there or anything like that. And that's how Kenny arrived in Atlanta.
Did Kenny Anderson, this is part of the lure of this recruitment. Did Kenny Anderson ever say, "I don't want to be another horse in Dean Smith's stable"?
No. You know, that was brought up, you know, that, you know, we all knew Coach Smith had a system, a great, great system. But you could find, you know, your individuality within that system. No, I never brought it up. Maybe some other people did. Maybe it was brought up in recruiting. But, you know, Kenny Smith had gone to North Carolina, and Kenny wanted to be different. I had the New York connection. His mother and I got along very well. You know, I was from the Bronx, and you know, it just all worked out. And it was a great day in my life when he told us that he was going to come.
Coach, you guys make the run to the 1990 Final Four. You probably give that great UNLV team the biggest challenge that they had on the way to the national title. What do you remember about that run? And then maybe a little bit about that game with UNLV. That was such a unbelievably good college team that you guys went up against in the national semifinal.
Yeah, well, first of all, the run. The run was incredible. You know, the second game up in Knoxville against Shaquille O'Neal, Chris Jackson, Stanley Roberts, they had us beat. And Kenny, Dennis Scott, Brian Oliver, the Lethal Weapon 3, they put on a show. And we came back and won that game. That was an amazing game. And then, of course, the game in New Orleans, we went to the Sweet 16, and the game against Michigan State, where Kenny Anderson's shot was, you know, he came right at the end. We were down two, and they missed a 1-1, and with 6 seconds to go, and Kenny came down, and I kept on yelling, shoot it, and he finally shot it, and it went in, and everybody went crazy. But I knew something was wrong because I saw the officials coming together. And they came over to me and said, "Bobby, we got a problem." And I said, "Okay, what is it?" And they said, "Well, the basket's good. We're going to count the basket, but we think Kenny's foot was on the line." And I didn't hesitate. I said, "Fine, let's go into overtime." And we beat him in overtime. Judd Heathcote, God bless him, he passed away. He would always remind me about that game. And then the next game, Minnesota gave us a great game. And we won that game. And then what I remember about UNLV was we were up 7 at halftime. And then Kenny Anderson getting in foul trouble. I took him out of the game. Kenny got mad at me. But they were a great team. But we had them on the ropes. And we just couldn't keep them on the ropes. They played zone the first half. And I knew they'd come after us the second half, and they did. And they wore us down, and they forced Kenny into a couple of offensive charges, and we wound up losing. It would have been great to have an ACC national championship game between Georgia Tech and Duke. That would have been something.
When you watch basketball today, do you see some elements of that Lethal Weapon 3 team that maybe was a little bit ahead of its time?
Yeah, I enjoyed the best one last night. I mean, Georgia Tech had a great win over Duke. But before that, I watched Baylor and West Virginia. The game has changed. The game is at the highest level I've ever seen it. There are so many really good players. The game, the popularity of the game is at the highest I've ever seen it. Once we get through this pandemic and get back to normal, I can't wait to see the crowds again. We've got a lot of problems in our game, but most of our problems are off the court. And these kids, what they can do today, they used to be, even up to last year and the year before, I used to talk about kids, the lack of shooting. But now, to see these kids shoot the basketball is absolutely incredible. Again, that Baylor, West Virginia, maybe it just happened, everybody was making the shots. But to see that the high level of basketball, it, to me, is great. I absolutely love it. I'm amazed at seeing all these transfers. Now the portal has become a recruiting thing in itself. And to see these kids, you see the point guard for Louisville, who was, he was the star at Radford. You see Clemson, their point guard is from Fordham. And you go right down the line and you see all these transfers from mid-Division I schools that are very, very good players. And all of a sudden they come into a power league and they're playing great basketball. So the game has changed in a lot of ways, but we got to keep our eye on all the things off the court. But I just love watching the game.
Coach, before we let you go, who came up with the Lethal Weapon 3 nickname for Brian Oliver, Dennis Scott, Kenny Anderson? Because now, 30 years later, I still think that's one of the coolest nicknames I've ever heard.
It really turned out to be. Mike Finn was the sports information director at the time. And, only Mike could answer that question. I can only guess, but Mike, of course, was at NC State before he came to Tech, and then he went into the ACC office, and now he's retired. So if you're around Mike Finn, if you run into him, ask him that question.
We're going to tell him that you said you did.
No, I wish I did. It was cool. You're right.
When you would go into a late second half huddle against Dean Smith, obviously you knew you had to game plan for Carolina's personnel, which, as you said, the Tar Heels typically had good players. What about Dean Smith did you have to account for as a coach as you got into those late close game situations that made those such good battles?
Yeah, well, Dean Smith loved to save his timeouts. Loved to. And we all knew that Dean Smith could take a 3-minute game and make it, 30 to 40 minutes. We knew that. We knew that was one of his creativities that he was known for. We knew about the four corners. We knew about the run and jump. And you just, if you were not prepared for these things, he would get you. He would always get you. He was so organized, so creative. He always seemed to be a step ahead of you. And, you just had to be aware of it. And what I would tell the guys in the huddle is Coach Smith is going to try and make this, he's going to start fouling, and he's going to utilize every second left on this clock. And this game is far from over. And then if we were ahead, you have to talk to, in the huddle, I would talk about the run and jump, the double team. And I say, the guys, okay, what's coming, guys. It's going to be a hard double team. They're going to rotate and try and get steals. And we got to be ready for the run and jump and so forth.
The bees go buzzing one by one, hurrah, hurrah. The bees go buzzing one by one, hurrah, hurrah.
Our interview today brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for right around 5 seconds. And at highway speeds, it's as if you are driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed. That's crazy talk. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put down that phone while you're driving. Let's have a hands-free NC. TrustedChoice.com to find an agent near you. Adam, normally we do our Champions Watch on Friday. We didn't have a show this past Friday. I wanted to have one. Adam didn't want to have one. Let's make that very clear. But man, there was a whole lot of champion performances by the Tar Heels dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. That's UNC Health. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. But Adam, now 5 number one ranked teams competing in Chapel Hill, both lacrosses, both tennises, and field hockey. Baseball had a big sweep at home over Clemson. They were hitting home. The ball was jumping out of the park. And just a great weekend in total for the Tar Heels. Also, we should note, of course, we hope Carolina women's basketball earns an at-large bid to the women's tournament. At the time Adam and I are recording, we don't know that answer. The Heels feel like they're in. I mean, all the projections have them in. So hopefully Courtney Banghart and her team are in as well. But we don't have enough information to talk about that right now.
We do have enough information to talk about those 5 number one ranked teams. Big win for men's lacrosse at Virginia. That's what propelled them up to the top spot to make it a quintet. Women's lacrosse just bulldozed somebody else. Was it Virginia Tech?
Yeah. Somebody, I'm going to check right now. Somebody told me the final score is like 22-1.
I think that's right.
I did not see the final. I knew they had won. Let's go here now, Adam. We're going to go to their schedule.
Can you Google this faster than Jones? Go.
22-1.
And they're good. Virginia Tech's a ranked team.
That's crazy talk. That's crazy.
The clock, there was running clock.
I like you, man, but you're crazy.
You're crazy. I like you, but you're crazy.
There was a running clock in that game, I think it's safe to say. And you talked about the baseball sweep. Tar Heel pitchers only gave up 12 hits all weekend to a good Clemson team. Got to cut down the walks a little bit. But, hey, when you're sweeping, you're sweeping. Doesn't matter how you do it.
Women's tennis, 6-1.
Why did they let them get the one?
They gave up a point. Calbus, our eyes are on you. So a great weekend for the Tar Heels in total. Congratulations to all those teams with big wins. And looking forward to the spring season continuing on. Adam, your list may be a mile wide, and our hearts are ready to embrace it. So let's go to Adam's list.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
First item on the list, ACC eliminates the intra-conference transfer rule.
I saw that.
Your thoughts?
Hey, let's see. Are there any players out there that want to come to the Tar Heels? No, so, I mean, basically, it used to be a lot harder. It wasn't impossible, but it was difficult to transfer from one conference team to the other. Now you can just do it. Now you can just do it with no penalty. Coach Williams, on our final Roy Williams show last week, said it was going to be like the Wild West when it comes to transfer rules this year with all the eligibility questions and all those different things. I mean, I just think that's just yet another layer to that. And I'm all for, certainly all for, student athletes having as much say and control of their own experiences. I do think it's going to be really hard to manage your roster right now. And especially, you know, I mean, basketball is one thing, and I'm not suggesting it's going to be easy in basketball, but when you get to, when you're talking football, I mean, Mac Brown has talked about this multiple times already, and he's not the only one, just about with the COVID year that people are getting, plus all the transfer rules. I mean, it is going to be an extraordinarily difficult couple of seasons before these numbers kind of even back out. And the transfer rule is not changing. That'll always be a challenge. But I think just all those things mixed together are going to make this a really difficult couple of seasons.
And I think it's time to accept that that's going to be the new normal. It's not going to be that, oh, you'll go 5 years without a transfer. I don't think that's happening anymore.
Yeah.
And I think you're just always going to have somebody who feels like they've got a situation somewhere else that's better and they're going to go try it. And now they've got the opportunity to do so. And it'll be interesting to see a couple of years down the road if we still think that's the best way to do it. You talked about salty tweets about Brian Kersey. You know who else is real salty and sometimes you forget about it? Illinois fans about 2005.
Yeah, they are.
I don't even remember how we got brought into that, but we did. And next thing you know, we got all kinds of grumpy Illinois fans complaining about 2005. And I guess they think Sean May fouled a lot or something. Look, he was trying to get around your illegal screens. He had to foul.
We learned, or we were brought into this by Christy Kent, who brought up a tweet from CBS Sports. The tweet from CBS Sports said, for the first time since 2005, Illinois is the number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Let's take a second to remember the greatness of D. Brown, Deron Williams, and Luther Head that season. Christy said, will we also be remembering how much greater UNC was in 05? I believe this merits a how can you justify that. And then poor Christy got a whole bunch of crazy Illinois people getting in her mentions.
They really were so grumpy. Well, and that goes somewhat hand in hand with SB Nation ranked the top 50 teams since some time, and their list was complete garbage.
And yeah, is that the one that did not have the 09 Tar Heels on there?
Well, I think they were on there, but they were like number 44, like below 93 Michigan. 93 Michigan was ahead of 93 Carolina. Loyola Marymount was on there at like number 20. Like, I know that was an awesome story. So if you're making a list of top stories, that's probably about right. But best teams, buddy, Kevin Madden's about to go shoot a backdoor layup on you, buddy. That's not going to work.
Ranzino Smith is salivating.
He wished he could have played against them all the time. We know that from the pod. So that was a weird list. Jones, there are some new football rules that have been suggested.
Oh, I haven't seen this.
Yes. First down lasers.
Right, yeah.
The NCAA Football Rules Committee has recommended these changes. Change to overtime rules.
Oh.
Under the proposal, teams would be required to run a two-point play after a touchdown when a game reaches the second overtime period.
Instead of, what is it now, fourth?
I think that's
third.
Right. Well, but then if a game reaches a third overtime, teams will run alternating two-point plays instead of starting another drive at the opponent's 25-yard
line. Wow, so that's moved way up from either the fifth or the sixth overtime,
right,
which is where it is right now. I mean, that's a significant bump up.
Yes. Teams can still choose whether to kick or go for two at the first overtime.
I don't like that.
I don't either.
I don't mind college overtime. I know that I'm guessing they're doing this because there have been some long overtime periods, Carolina included, here in the last couple of seasons. But when it's down to just one play, which is essentially what that means, that's odd to me, I feel like.
I think it'll be interesting to talk to Mac Brown about how this changes the way you practice. I think you got to practice two-point plays just about every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're probably your bank of two-point plays has to enlarge.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have three that you feel like that's going to work unless somebody is snooping in the law library.
Right.
They're also going to pay close attention to feigning injuries. The rules committee is proposing a framework to allow a school or conference to request a post-game video review about questionable actions through the NCAA secretary rules editor / national coordinator of officials. It sounds like a very streamlined process. Well, by then, what difference does it make? The game's over.
Yeah, I mean, that's hard. I mean, we've talked about this before. I don't know how you enforce that. Like, I mean, how are you ever going to prove that someone is feigning an injury? Ever.
Right.
And I think you end up looking bad if you do. And inevitably, you're going to call somebody out for doing it, and they aren't doing it. And then you look really, really bad.
Right.
I don't like it. We've both seen it happen. You see it every Saturday somewhere. But I don't know an easy way to get it out of the game. You just hope that people aren't doing it.
Right. Here's our points of emphasis for 2021. Officials will penalize any taunting action directed towards an opponent. I'm sure that won't get out of hand. Officials will be alert to players who are significantly in violation of the uniform rules, including specifically the pants, jersey, and t-shirts.
Sir, you have come out without a jersey on. That's a 15-yard penalty.
Coaches should not enter the field of play or leave the team area to debate officiating decisions.
Well,
it will be an automatic unsportsmanlike conduct foul.
Well, so basically we're just saying all the things we always say, and for like the first two games, they're going to enforce it. Somebody's going to lose a game because their coach gets a 15-yard flag, and then by late October, none of this will matter.
Right. And Nick Saban will be out there at the hash marks in the SEC championship game.
Right.
On the football track, really good story by Lee Pace on GoHeels.com about Mitch Mason and the a group of Rams Club members who had just done a grassroots effort to name the office that belongs to Mitch Mason in honor of Mitch Mason. So I thought that was really cool, both those Rams Club members who did it, the Rams Club in general, and of course, two former podcasts, Lee Pace and Mitch Mason, all involved in that story.
This is Lee Pace. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm Mitch Mason. See you later, Big Grits.
The Indiana basketball coaching job's open, Jones.
Yeah, it is. And Minnesota's open.
The coaching carousel is starting to spin. We know some former pod guests who could be good candidates for some of those jobs.
Yep.
Steve, be interesting to see what happens.
Steve Bucknell is
sitting
in his resume right now from across the pond.
I'm Steve Bucknell. See you, Big Grits.
Bobby Crimmins would be a good fit. Oh, and Boston College hired Earl Grant.
From
College of Charleston.
Yeah.
Who has almost no experience in the Northeast. It's all in the South.
That seems like a place you would need to have ties to the Northeast.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, he's a fine coach. But that's a different...
Yeah, it's a tough job.
That's a different place.
I told you this, I think, Adam, and this may not be exactly right, but it's close.
That's all we asked for.
Right. BC's been in the league for however many years, 17, I think. They've been the lowest possible seed in the ACC tournament, like 7 of those 17 years or something.
Mm.
So not real good.
Yeah.
Adam, I'm going to hit a pause on your list right there. I've got three quick ones. I'll let you take a breather.
Okay.
Number one, a little vacation from life here, Adam. So it was actually the Florida State game in the ACC tournament. And there were around 3,000 fans in the Greensboro Coliseum. I believe the official number was 2,820. You can check me on that. And I was walking from my seat to the back. And there was a little youngster, little young Tar Heel fan that was right there. And he was there with his dad. And I reached out to give him a fist bump. And he was freaked out by me. But then his dad was like, oh, that's Jones. He's on the radio. And so the kid like got it. And so, Adam, that was just cool because I was that kid and you were that kid. And it was just cool to be able to like dap that kid up.
That actually was me.
Yeah. It was actually Adam with his dad. They had just gotten there from CVS. And we pounded fists. So that was cool. Here's something that I was a little bit taken aback by, Adam. So, of course, I'm already on the hashtag grind for Wisconsin. So I went to the Wisconsin site. I want to do this. I want to go to it right now because I don't want to say it wrong. So I'm on the Wisconsin site. I'm just trying to get like their stats and their roster just to start getting familiar with them, right? And Adam, lo and behold, look at this. Lucas. Whoa. Living out their dreams. Adam, Wisconsin has some dude named Lucas who does the same thing you do for the Tar Heels.
Wait a minute.
So I clicked on it just to make sure it wasn't you. And it's Mike Lucas.
Yeah, that's not me.
There's Mike right there.
That is not me.
So he's the UWBadgers.com senior writer. We've got a Lucas off coming up. Too bad it's not in Lucas Oil Stadium.
What a head-to-head battle.
Yeah. So we've got a full-time 8-9 matchup of Lucas v. Lucas coming up.
Does he rapidly react?
He has, like, Lucas's three-pointers after the game.
Oh, just three, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not, yeah, he can't quite go as deep as we do here on GoHeels.com.
I bet he's never messed up the final score.
Yeah. So you just know that there's a pseudo Lucas out there writing for Wisconsin.
I can't wait to see Cousin Mike up there in West Lafayette. Or is it West Lafette?
And finally, Adam, this isn't even a, I don't even want this, because there was nothing about this that I did want. It was just strictly I didn't want it. So after the game on Friday, I was about to exit the Greensboro Coliseum. I was going to make a quick pit stop in the restroom and then go and grab a bottle of water for my drive home. Well, Adam, I go into the restroom and begin the process of being in the restroom, and the zipper on my pants rips clear off, Adam. So, I still wanted to go get my waters, but I didn't want to walk in there with, you know, the breeze flying through. So, fortunately, I had on a pullover, a classy quarter zip. And so I'm walking in there, like, pulling the quarter zip all the way down to make sure that nothing happened in there. But at this point, like, they've got sandwiches. Well, yeah, I'd like a sandwich. So I'm trying to get a sandwich and my waters. Fortunately, I had the classic backpack that has, as we know, the water holders on the side. So that freed up a little bit of hand usage. So I had a sandwich and some chips. I'm pulling down my Q-zip and having my waters. Yeah, Q-zip, quarter zip, classic Q-zip, a CQZ. Wait, yeah, CQZ. So it was just a mess. But fortunately, we got out without any incident, Adam. But just know that I was having to deal with these problems after a disappointing defeat, so I wasn't in the best of moods.
So many things I thought of to say, so few that I think either A, would make the cut, or B, not get someone in trouble. I'm sorry to hear about your troubles.
Thank you, Adam.
We gotta.
Now I've got to take those pants to the tailor. Because I don't know, I can't fix a zipper. What am I?
Oh, no.
What am I, astrophysicist? Can't fix that.
Also, why are we still using zippers? There's nothing better.
Is there not a laser that could?
Hear me out. Pants lasers. Whew. We've gotten a lot of good emails here recently. I would like to congratulate Terrell Joy on joining the 100% Club. He didn't start listening to the pod until July of 17 with the Coach Williams interview, and he's gone back and listened to the first year, and he sent us some nuggets, some of which
I had forgotten. Yeah.
Number one, Ryan Hunt, creator of the pod intro music, is very talented.
He is. Now, the current music that has the Give UNC tag on there is not Ryan Hunt's stuff. It's the stuff that's been on there every other show, but the Give UNC tag is so long. Had to use some different music for it, but just know that Ryan Hunt is always hashtag in our hearts.
Number two, Adam talked about a video pod in the second episode.
Man.
I don't remember doing that, but as Terrell says, such a visionary, I would have to agree with that.
Yeah.
Number three, Adam saying, until you come to UNC, you mean nothing to me, encapsulates my feelings exactly. I think that had to do with recruiting.
I would think so.
And still the case. Number four, Jones saying eating Twizzlers is like eating wax is spot on.
Yeah, Twizzlers are gross.
Number five, the initial apprehension about going to the Sun Bowl in El Paso is so funny in retrospect.
Yeah. Look, that's where the pod took another step forward.
Number six, El Paso will forever be six-shooter city to me. Number seven, low power mode changed a lot of lives. That's where we really broke through, was low power mode.
Well, and when we called the El Paso City Council line.
Yeah. What you didn't hear was even better.
That never made it.
Number eight, I have to admit, I've never had love for Rick Barnes either, for obvious reasons. Mm. The interview with him softened my stance. I can forgive, but will never forget. Mm. Number nine, Dewey Burke equals Christmas. I'll be honest, I don't remember that.
Oh, it has to do with Dewey's Bakery. Find sponsor here on the pod in the month of December.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I thought it had something to do with biscuits. which the Tar Heels got in Greensboro.
Yeah, they did.
Number 10, Naked versus Naked, LOL. Reminds me of the Louis Grizzard comedy routine. Yes, Louis Grizzard, funny writer guy.
Yes.
So.
Oh, wait, Adam, there's point 11 there.
Nope, didn't have that on mine. Then let's go to Mitchell McGirt. The Greenville Rose High School Rampants.
Gotta say, this one makes sense too, Adam.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard to argue when you see the logo. Mitchell writes, "It was always my understanding that the mascot for J.H. Rose High School was a rampant lion of Scotland." And then Mitchell sent a link, which, in all honesty, it's a compelling link.
Yeah, it really sells it, because that's pretty much the Rose logo right there.
But I choose to believe that it could be either one.
Yeah.
Mitchell also says, unrelated, I went on vacation last week. Before I left the office on my last day before my vacation, I changed my voicemail on my office phone.
Yeah.
So Mitchell does record his own voicemail. It's different on your office phone.
Yeah. That's got to be much more formal.
Yeah. I told folks that I'd be out of the office, but almost instinctively, I added, "See you later, Big Grits," at the end of the message. I just went ahead and left it on there. I mean, why not?
Yeah. Thanks, Mitchell. That's right. No sense. Maybe we should do that on our voicemails, Adam. Just have it say, "See you later, Big Grits."
Yeah, we could.
We've got plenty of options of people to put on there if you want to have a famous celebrity on there.
Now, this was a jam-packed email of news from Jeremy Wahlberg. Dear Jones and Adam, we live in Georgia, so sadly we cannot enjoy the Ole Roy donut.
Adam, are you talking about the Ole Roy donut from Dunkin'?
Yes.
Oh, 50 cents of every Ole Roy donut purchased from March 14th through March 27th. So, guys, we're in the Ole Roy window right now. Goes to Coach Williams' favorite, a Boston cream asterisk donut from Dunkin', drizzled with Carolina Blue icing. Get your Ole Roy donut at your local Dunkin' restaurant. Support the UNC Children's Hospital or Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. So 50% or 50 cents from every one of those donuts purchased goes to either help UNC Children's Hospital or the Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina.
Now, Jeremy wants us to please clarify what type of cream is in
Absolutely.
The middle. Is it the yellow Boston cream? Jeremy says, not a fan.
That I like.
Or the white vanilla cream? Jeremy says, big fan.
Well, Adam, Coach Williams kind of threw some fuel on this fire on the radio show last week, because I asked him about the Ole Roy donut. And when we were talking about your lack of liking the cream, he said Bavarian instead of Boston. Was it just a slip of the tongue? Is that the type of cream that he really likes? Did he think it was Bavarian, but it is Boston? Is it actually Bavarian? These are all questions I don't know the answer to.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. Because I am a trained journalist, I wanted to get to the bottom of this mystery.
So you ordered an Ole Roy.
I went to Dunkin' Donuts on Sunday in Chapel Hill, right on Franklin Street. I said,
that's the first day of the window.
Yeah. I said, folks, I'm going to need some of those Ole Roys. And do you know what they told me? Can't get them. They sell out every morning.
Really?
Yeah. This was at around 2 or 3 in the afternoon, so I'd just gotten up. And they said, I guess the window must have been open at that Dunkin' Donuts for a while, because they said every single day they've had them, they're gone by 9 or 10 in the morning.
Hmm. Well, so good for you, Tar Heel fans.
I guess.
So we still don't know.
But not good for me. So I'll try again another day if I can get up that early, and we'll try to get to the bottom of this. But for now,
I feel like we should be able to get some Ole Roy donuts in here.
You would surely think so.
I'm going to make a call, Adam, when we're done here. See if we can get some Ole Roys in here.
It's time to make the donuts. So then Jeremy says, in slightly more important news, his younger daughter, Anna, you remember Anna Jones?
I do.
She did the UNC periodic table and she got in the wrong car.
I remember both those things.
Not at the same time. Those are separate occasions. Anna got accepted to Carolina and will be a freshman next year. So,
Adam, we've done this pod long enough to the point that youngsters who were doing UNC periodic tables for school projects in like middle school are now coming to Carolina.
Yeah, they were doing wacky things and now they're getting in. Look, we know about the college admissions game. To get into Carolina present day, you have to be a lot smarter than either me or Jones.
Oh,
and
yeah,
to get into Carolina out of state present day, you have to be smarter than Jones and me put together.
Yeah.
So, Anna, good job, and I hope you wrote your essay about getting in the wrong car and how that can be a life lesson that can propel you on to near potty excitement. Andrew Blate, he's on the road to 100, 100% club, that is, and he just listened to the Ben Jones interview from January 2nd, 2018, and he just wanted to say what a good interview that was and kind of unexpected, too.
Adam, you talking about Cooter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Breaker one, might be crazy, but I ain't dumb. Crazy Cooter coming at you. Hey, y'all, it's old Ben Jones from the Dukes of Hazzard. See you later, Big Grits. I'm down, I'm gone.
We had him right here in the studio.
Yeah, we did. Whew. To come sign the... He made a special trip to come sign the board here in this studio.
He did.
Because the interview was in the old studio.
Yeah, he was pre-board.
Yeah.
But then, Ken, he just...
He was pre-Mobile Pod World Headquarters.
Yeah, he just came in and just shot the breeze with us after he signed the board. Talked about the Heels. Just us and Cooter. What a world. Jen Fuller, your tweet about Rose Blumkin was on the video pod at where it deserved to be. Mike Dale, also in the 100% Club. The 100% Club is starting to fill up.
Yep.
I think it's because you get all those rewards when you make it. So congratulations to him. And that's it on the list.
We have some stories that we do want to get to, but we're going to hold it because we have an email. We have the great Lee Melchione story.
And we've gotten some independent confirmation on that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Not from Lee Melchione.
No.
From Casey Sturgill.
Still waiting to hear from Lee Melchione.
Hello, Lee.
Lee, hello. So we do have another story time or two in the email inbox that we want to get to, but we won't do it today since Adam's list was so long.
I apologize.
Adam, do we have anything else?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So we will be back for a Friday show this week. We'll preview the matchup with Wisconsin in the NCAA tournament. We'll have a great guest, maybe guests, and a lot more. So we will be back on Friday. Adam wouldn't let us do one this past Friday, but we're back this upcoming Friday. But until then, we have to let this send you out. And that is ACC legend Bobby Crimmins and the RZA getting us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
This is Bobby Crimmins. See you later, Big Grit.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network. Brought to you by GiveUNC, Carolina's annual giving day. Make this March 30th a day like no other by supporting the causes at Carolina that inspire you most.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.